Coming up on This Week in Computer Hardware, Flash Memory Summit. We're talking 48-layer VNAND and 60-terabyte SSDs. Qualcomm security problems, Bluetooth locks are a mess. Dates for the PlayStation 4.5 and the iPhone 7. All that and more coming up next on Twitch.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twitch.
Bandwidth for Twitch is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, episode 376, recorded August 11th, 2016. 60-terabyte SSDs and a new date for the iPhone 7. This episode of This Week in Computer Hardware is brought to you by Tracker. Tracker makes losing things a thing of the past. Pair a tracker to your smartphone, attach it to any item, and find its precise location with the tap of a button. Visit thetracker.com right now and enter promo code Twitch for 30% off your entire order. Welcome to Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, Twitch weekly show that aims to bring you the most useful, most informative, most engaging, most delightful, and yes, ladies and gentlemen, most storage-filled hardware news, at least today. Alan Malventano joining us. How you doing, sir?
It's like I'm in the same room with you. I don't know. Something's weird going on here.
Something's weird going on here. You are in the same room with me. Well, just a few feet over there. You've been at Flash Memory Summit 2016.
I have.
And I want a 60-terabyte hard drive. Excuse me, a 60-terabyte SSD.
Do you?
From Seagate. Is that like a house mortgage for that one?
Yeah, probably, actually. They managed to cram, I think it's three PCBs with a whole bunch of flash packages on both sides of each one of those PCBs, and then they cram all of those into what looks like a 3.5-inch hard drive, and it connects via SAS 12 gigabit. I think it's like dual SAS 12 gigabit. So you end up getting like a gig and a half per second throughput, which is going to take you a while, even at a gig and a half per second, to write 60 terabytes if you wanted to fill the whole thing. But, you know, they're going for like super, super dense storage to be able to plug into a data center where they're just going to have like, you know, chassis full of these things.
So we're talking about a 17 drives to a petabyte.
Yeah. And you can potentially fit 17 drives into something like a 3U or 4U chassis easily, actually. So that's, you know, you could be talking like tens, dozens of petabytes just sitting in one 42U chassis or 42U rack. It's pretty impressive.
Is that going to be shipping anytime soon, or is that more of a theoretical product that's pretty way out?
I think they were doing it more as a theoretical thing. Didn't look like they were ready to ramp up and do, you know, crazy volume shipment, but it's definitely a conceivable thing. It could happen. We're just not sure which way things are going to go as far as how... It all depends on how fast you need to connect to your storage versus just how much bulk storage you want. So this one goes more for the really low power consumption, yet a huge amount of storage. Like this thing idles at like 4 watts, and I think active it's only like 15 watts. And that's similar to what regular hard drive territory is, except it's 60 terabytes of flash. So pretty impressive.
It's pretty crazy when you think about it, the idea. It's fairly dense. It looks like it's maybe the size of a couple... three and a half inch hard drives.
There's for regular hard drives, you're up to 10 terabytes now,
right?
Probably 12 soon. But still, when it comes to random performance, you just can't compare hard drives to flash at all. So, you know, this is a whole bunch of flash that you can randomly access super fast, right?
I wait with bated breath. The pricing on that's going to be tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars, I would think.
It is just a lot of raw flash, right? So the cost per gig is going to be similar to what you see, you know, even in the consumer space right now, right? Because the flash still costs money. They might have, you know, done some cool stuff with a controller and some cool chips to be able to fan out to talk to so much flash from just a single controller. But at the end of the day, you're just buying 60 terabytes worth of flash to put in this thing. So it's going to cost some bank. Yeah.
I'm sitting here like 60 times 1,000 times 0.25. Oh, hey, it's only $15,000.
Only 15 grand.
You know, it's all of a sudden it almost seems approachable, affordable. I exaggerate slightly on the affordability of a $15,000 drive that connects to nothing you're actually going to have in terms of an interface inside your home PC. But we got fourth generation VNAND from Samsung and some what should be some lower prices on fairly large or high capacity SSDs, I would think.
So fourth generation VNAND. So what Samsung is shipping right now in some of their drives is 48 layer. Most of the shipping products, I think, are still 32 layer. There's only a few things that move to 48 layer, but they're kind of transitioning stuff over. But they're moving again, upping from 48 to 64 layer. And what that enables is 64 gigabytes per die. And when you consider that you stack multiple in a package, Samsung is stacked up to like 16 in each package, and you can have multiple packages in a given SSD. That actually led to another announcement that they did at the show, which was that SSD that was previously a 16 terabyte, 2.5 inch form factor SSD now becomes a 32 terabyte of that same thing. Like they haven't really rearranged how the drive works or anything. They just, you know, once the dies double in capacity, then, any drive that you put them in just doubles in capacity right along with it. Pretty cool announcements from Samsung. They also had not yet posted on, but they had something that was like supposed to be a competitor to CrossPoint. Mm-hmm. But I think it's really just SLC Flash that has really high endurance or something like that. It's almost like they were trying to do a Me Too move because CrossPoint was a pretty huge part of the announcements in the show this year. So I think there were a lot of the companies trying to come up with something to have a counterpoint to that CrossPoint stuff.
That's should we just at that point skip straight into Micron's Quantx, the CrossPoint prototype
SSD?
Sure.
So Micron's announcement at the show were what they call Quantx, which is Intel has Optane, that's their brand for CrossPoint. Micron's Quantx, that's just their name, same kind of deal. But
right.
They showed some performance, which is that slide there at the top there showing on the stream, and that's like amazing, amazing performance. That orange line all the way down at the bottom there is their 9100 SSD, which is basically a fire-breathing NVMe Enterprise SSD that we tested at PC Pur just a couple weeks ago. And that's an amazingly fast SSD, and you can tell that for that SSD to reach its potential, you have to really hit it with a lot of commands at the same time. Whereas this Quantx product using mm-hmm. CrossPoint, you only have to give it four commands ahead in order for it to go full speed. So it's able to saturate four lanes of PCI Express 3 with random 4K access, and it could do that only knowing that what the next four commands is, which means it's like super, super fast storage. But what we got to see at the show was an actual prototype board, mm-hmm. Which was, I believe their prototype board was actually PCIe 3.0x8. So that device can go, it was like just insane high numbers. It can basically saturate eight lanes of PCI Express with 4K random at a queue depth of somewhere around 8. And what you're looking at there on the video right now is actually the packaged CrossPoint installed on a board. Like, that thing could be plugged into a system and have lightning fast, persistent solid state storage.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Intel has told me that they plan on launching a product with CrossPoint in it before the end of the year.
So are they actually... So they're not. Intel is not actually shooting or delivering any CrossPoint products currently.
Well, no, not yet. Okay. Neither side is. Neither Intel nor Micron. Intel before the end of the year, and I'm gonna try to hold them to it. They keep talking it like talking it up like you're gonna have something to test before the end of the year. So okay, fine. Micron, I think, is playing a little bit of more of a long game on it, working more on the development before they launch. And they've told me like middle of next year from their side.
Okay. And we don't anticipate either of these trickling down to consumer storage in 2017 or 2018, do we?
It might by the end of next year.
Okay.
The thing is, it's going to be enterprise stuff first because this is really, really fast flash, or not even flash, but like, you know, persistent storage. And it's, if anything, it's overkill for consumers. Because mm-hmm. consumer stuff, really fast NVMe flash-based products can go fast enough to where you're almost bottlenecking the CPU as opposed to the flash. Like you, like even I even run into issues testing this stuff where I have to use multiple cores worth of processing from the CPU to be able to max out what the NVMe flash-based part can do. So they're going to start with enterprise, but where I see it going is NAND flash-based things that are using TLC flash, but with a little bit of crosspoint on the front end acting as a buffer or a cache. Mm-hmm. So that would give you the best of both worlds, right? You can your right. flash write speed could actually be relatively poor, but if you have 50 or 100 gig worth of crosspoint that acts more like RAM than it does flash, then basically, for all intents and purposes, you have a flash, like a RAM drive in your system. And that would be very interesting, but the controller technology is not there yet. That's the holdup. Like, you just have no... People making SSD controllers just were not planning on putting a huge amount of something that's as fast as RAM as a buffer.
Right.
At least not yet. So we have to wait for that stuff to be developed and make it into the channel and, you know, actually be used by people. And then we'll start seeing it trickle into consumer stuff.
Slowly but surely.
Yep. It'll get there.
Supermicro's all-flash NVMe systems switching PCI Express up to 48 SSDs.
Yeah, so they had this spread out there at the show. And so the first product there is 10 NVMe SSDs connected to what would be a pair of Xeons in a 1U chassis. So that's like super thin chassis. You could put a whole bunch of those in the server, and you can have a whole bunch of processing power and 10 NVMe drives. And they're those in that configuration, they're set up in such a way where every single SSD has four lanes straight to the CPU. So it's kind of tying up all the CPU lanes with just pure storage throughput. But if you want to have more storage, and so skip past that next picture there, because that's just showing the insides of it. If you want more, you can have 24 across, which is actually the picture just before the one you're on right now. So it's 24 across, and they have to do some kind of creative things with PCIe switches to be able to hook that many lanes and feed them all into, you know, just a pair of Xeon CPUs. Because there's actually more PCIe lanes than there is connectivity to the processors. And then if 24 isn't enough, next up is yet another row of 24 sitting nestled behind the row in the front that has a little pivot so you can still hot swap the drives. And that goes even more creative use of PCIe switches to be able to connect. I mean, that's an insane amount. It's 48 devices times four. It's like 192 PCIe lanes trying to trickle down into just however many PCIe lanes you have from a pair of Xeons. But what I mentioned in that article was we've tested stuff where we did triple M.2 NVMe testing in the past, and we did it on a Z170 platform where the bottleneck was actually DMI. It was actually the connection between the chipset and the CPU. And that bottleneck was only the throughput of roughly one of those parts. Yet we were able to put three in a RAID, and we saw huge improvements in latency. Like, latency dropped to much lower values because those SSDs can talk to the rest of the system. Like, they were basically spreading the load across the three SSDs we were testing. So in a system like that, even though you have so many SSDs, you might think that you're immediately bottlenecking all the throughput from connected to the Xeons. When it comes to random access and maintaining very low latency, for that random access, that is just all of those SSDs individually would just be sipping throughput. And so all their latencies would be super, super low. But you wouldn't be able to transfer, say, sequential and saturate all of them all at the same time. But when it came to random, that thing would just be a beast.
Nothing wrong with having all the bandwidth. It's some of these products we're going to see impacting home users in the next few months or next year. A lot of this is also pretty bleeding edge for data centers. But it's amazing to realize how much actual throughput, if you have the money to hurl at it, you can put together at this point.
Yep. So,
oh my goodness. So DEF CON and Black Hat were last week. I was down there with the Hack 5 crew. One of the biggest stories that came out was from Checkpoint, the security firm, announced that they had found four major security holes in Qualcomm chips that impacts something in the neighborhood of 900 million devices.
Ouch.
So Qualcomm makes the chips. Checkpoint is the security firm that found the holes. Three of the holes have been patched. The fourth one, they look to be at the beginnings of a solution. If you're a Nexus owner, your phone can be patched immediately. Everybody else has to wait for their manufacturer and then, of course, their carrier to release the updates to the phone. But we're looking at the BlackBerry Priv, the BlackPhone 1, the BlackPhone 2, the Nexus 5X, 6, and 6P, which have been patched, the HTC 1, HTC M9, HTC 10, the LG G4, G5, V10. The new Moto X by Motorola, the OnePlus One, the OnePlus Two, the OnePlus Three, the Samsung Galaxy S7 and S7 Edge, the Sony Xperia Z Ultra. It goes on for a while.
S7's brand new phone.
Yeah, it's pretty much all the top of the line phones. And what's scary about these, they would, if they were exploited, they would give root level access. Some people are arguing that people are making a big deal of this because 900 million makes such a good title, so all those media weasels are on it, you know. But my issue with this is that it's going to take a while for these patches to trickle through. You know, they Qualcomm basically said, we were notified about these flaws between February and April of this year, and they made patches available between April and July. So hopefully, you know, what's left of BlackBerry, Google, HTC, LG, OnePlus, Motorola, Samsung, and Sony are all furiously working on getting the updates, the driver updates that are necessary, out to the carriers. And hopefully the carriers don't do their classic, like, let's see how long we can take to get these patches out. Having had to wait, you know, 12, 15 weeks to fix a problem with a brand new phone in the past, I may be a little cranky about that. If you have a Bluetooth lock on your house and it's not made by Kwikset, you should probably get rid of it. that's a brief summary of what researchers found when looking at Bluetooth locks. Bluetooth low energy locks, the vast majority of them, a researcher named Anthony Rose, looked at 16 Bluetooth locks. 12 of them opened wirelessly when attacked. In some cases, they pass the password over in the clear, or they double send the password so that you can basically, or you can resend the password that's been sent out. It's messy. You know, the Bluetooth comms were poorly implemented, either on the app or the phone itself. It's really frustrating because a lot of these companies are like, Bluetooth security, amazing. And the only one that they, there are two they couldn't crack, from August and, or four, I guess, from August and from Kwikset. And the August locks, vulnerability was revealed the next day at DEF CON. So, take the idea that your house is profoundly secure with a grain of salt with Bluetooth locks. You know, we saw with Bluetooth type auto locking systems on automobiles, it went from a theory to a fairly inexpensive box that anybody could purchase or build in a staggeringly short period of time. So if it was my house, I'd pull the Bluetooth lock off it. But I may just be a little more paranoid than most people. And if you're looking for the origins of Skynet, they may not be Google. They may come from DARPA. They ran a pretty amazing contest, the DARPA Cyber Grand Challenge, which essentially, if you take a look at the video, it was a group of teams that built these boxes you'll see in a second that are actually hacking with each other. I don't know a simpler way to say it. It's a pretty extraordinary to look at, because the whole point of these, they're essentially playing a capture the flag style security attack with each other. You know, DARPA's goal was to have autonomous hacking machines. They want to accelerate the development of advanced autonomous systems that could detect, evaluate, and patch software vulnerabilities before adversaries have a chance to exploit them. Carnegie Mellon won their system Mayhem. The team All Secure won the $2 million first prize. I guess this was about 3 years in the running to put this together. And it was pretty exciting to kind of see this come off. And I'm really, really curious to see where this goes, or perhaps just totally terrified. On the totally terrified angle, I should also mention that Mr. Rose, the researcher that was looking at the Bluetooth locks, contacted 12, basically the manufacturers of 12 of the locks he was able to open. And most of them either didn't respond, didn't care, or flat out said they knew about the vulnerability and they weren't going to fix it. So the Internet of Things is turning to be just as awful as we feared it might be. So, something that's not terrifying, the Tracker. This episode of This Week in Computer Hardware is brought to you by Tracker. Smart cars, smartphones, smart homes. Technology has made everything smart, but losing one's possessions can make smart people feel less than smart. Tracker makes losing things a thing of the past. It's amazing how easy it is to find something. You just pair the tracker to your smartphone, attach the tracker to, say, your knapsack or that toy that your kid loves so much or your phone or your car keys. And Tracker makes losing things, like I said, a thing of the past. Just tap a button, you find out where the device is. Your phone can track up to 10 devices at once, and Tracker is enabled by Bluetooth Low Energy, so the battery lasts up to 1 year. You can customize two-way separation alerts, so you're notified before you forget your item. So if you get too far from it, if you walk away, or if it walks away from you because somebody picked it up, an alert will go off and let you know it's time to grab your stuff. If you lose your phone, press the Tracker button, and your phone rings even if it's on silent. And you can now personalize your Tracker with a laser engraved or a custom printed image. It's pretty crazy that there's over 1.5 million devices, 1.5 million trackers are out there. That makes it the largest crowd GPS network in the world. So your lost item shows up on a map, even if it's miles away, because they can all communicate with each other. The Tracker app records your lost item's last known location on a map. And when another tracker user comes within a 100-foot range of your item, you get a GPS update of your item's location. Tracker Atlas works with your Tracker Bravo or third-party Bluetooth tracker to pinpoint your items on a customizable floor plan of your home. Simply ask Tracker Atlas where your item is, and you'll instantly get an answer with no need to search. Do yourself a favor. Go to thetracker.com and never lose your possessions again. And just for our audience, if you enter in the promo code Twitch, that's T-W-I-C-H, you're going to get 30% off your entire order. That's thetracker.com, the promo code Twitch, T-W-I-C-H, for 30% off your entire Tracker order. And we want to thank Tracker for their support of This Week in Computer Hardware. Man, so much security. If you've been thinking about buying a new iPhone or a new MacBook, the time is near. Looks like September 7th is going to be the next iPhone announcement. And the rumors started this week that we're going to have our first major overhaul of the MacBook Pro lineup in 4 years. Yeah. The notebooks are expected to be thinner. I hope they're not as bendable as my original iPhone 6 was. It's going to be a touchscreen strip for function keys. And rumor has it they're going to have better graphics, better GPU options for expert users and for video gaming. The sources on all this, of course, are silent or hidden or just simply don't want to be named. But the computers apparently are in beta testing or advanced testing, Bloomberg writes, and have been basically in field test with inside of Apple since earlier this year. They are not likely to show up at the September 7th meeting that debuts the new iPhone. But
yeah, I don't think they would show up that early because this article mentions AMD Polaris, and I don't know if that's going to be ready for mobile with super low power consumption like that quickly.
Yeah. Well, I'll be curious. It's been interesting to watch in response to these rumors where people are talking about, oh, there hasn't been any changes in the laptop because there's been no advances in technology to justify it. I'm not entirely sure I buy into that, but I'll be really curious to see, you know, if they bring over Touch ID to the MacBook Pro. and how thin they are this time. Rumor has it, instead of a tapered design, it's going to be sort of a single thickness, a ton of USB-C, as in one port. Not that I find that frustrating. I would like more ports, Apple. I wonder if they'll have a lightning jack for audio to match the iPhone 7, which is supposed to have dual cameras and, of course, a lightning port, but no audio port. Sony, being the wild things that they are, decided to schedule their PlayStation announcements. The successor to the PlayStation 4, what I think of as the PlayStation 4K, apparently they have scheduled that for September 7th also.
Huh.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wonder which one people are going to watch more of.
That's a fine question,
because
there's a lot of PlayStation fanboys and there's a lot of iPhone fanboys. it'll be curious to see, because they're going to have the PlayStation meeting, is what Sony's calling the gathering on September 7th. Vice Gaming and Game Blog, I think it's going to be the PlayStation 4 Neo will be compatible with PlayStation 4 games. But it's going to offer better graphics and supposed to support 4K games, movies, and TV shows, which would bring it in line with the latest MacBook Pro, the latest Xbox. So, which is right now a pretty fantastic deal on a Blu-ray player, because it's a Blu-ray player, that Xbox, and of course you can use it to play games too. Are you currently wearing a smartwatch, or have you given up?
I have resisted all temptation so far.
Really?
I have.
That's unusual for you. I'm very proud of you. You love your technology. So you've probably not been waiting with bated breath for the Apple Watch 2.
I haven't been waiting with bated breath, but that might, I don't know. It depends on how much of an improvement it is. If it is a good enough improvement, that might be what makes me decide to pick one up. But I was not impressed enough with the first generation to have to run out and buy one.
Well, in theory, the second generation of the tvOS makes the Apple Watch everything it should have been when it launched originally. The rumor is that the Apple Watch 2 is going to have GPS, a barometer, more battery life, and the same thickness when it launches later this year. Some KGI securities analyst Ming-Chi Ko, who sent out a research note to investors today, the crew at Mac Rumors writes, in which he predicts an all-new Apple Watch 2 second half of 2016, TSMC-built processor, and also apparently, quote, superior waterproofing.
Huh.
Yeah. I don't know. The first thing I hear from a lot of people is, why a barometer?
I thought the last one was supposed to be waterproof anyway, but...
Well, apparently it was not as waterproof as they would like it to.
All right.
Or like it to be. So we wait with bated breath on that one. Something I'm actually pretty excited about. It looks like Google, according to Business Insider, Google's going to be bringing triangle fiber, is going to be bringing a wireless version of fiber. It's gigabit Ethernet system. They are apparently, says Business Insider, testing a new wireless transmission technology using the 3.5 gigahertz band in Kansas City. Apparently the FCC filing, which was basically a giant sea of redacted statements, as if you were looking at some vintage CIA papers, looks like they want to actually put experimental transmitters at up to 24 locations. Business Insider says Provo, Utah, Omaha, Nebraska, Boulder, Colorado, and many, many more for a period of 24 months. And they're trying to get authorization to operate between the 3.4 and 3.8 gigahertz band. So the project is in early stages, and Google says, quote, we are working to test the viability of a wireless network that relies on newly available spectrum. And a big part of it, them going wireless, is, of course, because digging holes in the ground and burying cable is actually incredibly slow and incredibly expensive. So you looking for an alternative source, or are you happy with Cam? Are you? I thought you were Comcast, or you?
I've got 300 megabit Time Warner where I'm at, so I'm good.
Nice.
It's pretty quick.
Oh my goodness! Any more exciting news you expect to come out of Flash Memory Summit, or is it effectively over for you now?
I haven't written it up yet, but okay. High Point launched a round of raid cards.
Really?
And they have a card that's capable of doing hardware raid of quad NVMe U.2 devices. In other words, like those 2.5-inch U.2 form factor SSDs. There's just a really small half-height, half-length card that's able to just branch out to four of those and do insane throughputs. I think it was like over 10 gig per second throughput of figures that I saw from them. And they had a different product that I thought was pretty interesting. They had a similar kind of thing. It was but it was using mini-SAS HD connectors on a SATA-only RAID card, so not like it just meant for more consumer drives, but it was a 16-way RAID card that could handle up to 6 gigabytes per second, and it's supposed to be like $300.
Nice.
Which is $300 for a RAID card like that. That's wasn't too long ago those things would be a grand. Actually, I think some companies are still selling them for a grand. So that's pretty cool. We're probably going to try to take a look at one of those and throw 16 SSDs on it and see how fast it'll actually go.
Nice. Oh my goodness! More DEF CON coverage, and a discussion of a really painful discussion. Not the DEF CON coverage; that was pretty painless talking about that on Tech Thing. But we had a viewer write in. His mom got caught up in one of those tech support scams where the advertisement blows up in your web page and starts doing crazy alarm sounds and tells you that you have been halted or breached or locked up or dial this 1-800 number. And she dialed the 1-800 number, gave him $512 for what I think is like a $140 security application, and using her checking account number. So we went through the whole process of what he and mom need to do to try to make sure A, her checking account doesn't get emptied, and B, to get this horrible cruft off of your system. It is amazing the resources that the Federal Trade Commission has available, because the whole tech support scamming thing has gotten profoundly ugly. So if you think your browser is telling you that your computer has been infected and you need to call Microsoft or security experts at a 1-800 number, stop. That's all I'm going to say right now. So my goodness. You can find more Alan's work, ladies and gentlemen, up at pcper.com. As always, you can find me at techthing.com or abexcel.com, the show I do with Robert Herron about home theater technology. And Home Theater Geeks is coming up. Actually, it's not coming up because you're listening to a podcast you downloaded. But if you were listening live at twit.tv, you would be able to watch Home Theater Geeks next. Twit.tv is also the home of twit.tv/Twitch, where you can find all the information on how to subscribe to the show, all of our older episodes, and more information. With that, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Malventano, thank you so much for joining us.
Glad to be here.
All right, man. Ryan Shrout is rumored to be back from his secret journey to see a GPU manufacturer in London. That's all I can say, because I don't even know which GPU manufacturer he saw. What's the third new unprecedented GPU manufacturer, but that isn't going to happen. You'll find out more than next week. I'm Patrick Norton.
I'm Alan Malventano.
See you next week on Twitch.